Hello, my name is Karina and I'm here on the Pitch House podcast talking to the director and star of Heathers, which is about to enjoy its digital restoration for a 30th anniversary. First of all, I'll get you to introduce yourselves as you would like to do so.
Hi, I'm Lisanne Falk, Heather McNamara in the movie Heathers.
I'm Michael Lehman, director in the movie Heathers.
Excellent. So 30 years. That's quite a while. It's never actually left the film psyche, though. I feel like Heathers has always been knocking around from my days back at university, talking about teen flicks and female girl gangs and all that. But what is it about Heathers that you think has kept it so fresh, and why are we still celebrating it? Big question. Just want to throw that in there for the first one.
Let's start with the small question. For me, as soon as this 30th anniversary reissue came along, I started asking myself and trying to look at it with a fresh perspective and rewatching the movie and saying, wow, it's really interesting. What about this film is still relevant and speaking to people, because it seems bigger now than it ever was when it came out. And yeah. I just keep going back to the point that in a high school movie, it's the time of your life where you're trying to figure out who you are, where you fit in, what you're made of. And I think the role of Veronica in particular, a lot of girls identify with her because you always think you want to be popular when you're not popular. And then you get popular Veronica gets popular, and then she's kind of like, it's not all that. And I actually don't like these people, and it's not what it was cracked up to be. So I think that is something that will never go out of fashion, and what will be a question teenagers, you know, in the future will be asking themselves.
Absolutely. Because I certainly myself, and I'm sure I'm speaking on a lot of people that watched it, especially as young women going through high school, Veronica is somebody that you can really identify with, because she's pretty, but she's not in that blonde, she's slim, but ultimately, you know, she's somebody that you can actually identify yourself with, because she's complicated and she's very internalized, and she's there scribbling away with her diary. And I know I had a diary at the time, and I was just like, oh, that's me. That's the one I want to be. But yeah, she's messy and complicated, and it's very dynamic, and it felt quite revolutionary to have a character like that to be able to relate to. And I think that's what's worked so well for this particular film in a myriad of other films that have high school depictions that don't quite have that dark wry element which actually exists. That's actually there, isn't it, on the stage of school teen movies. I mean, what's it like creating such a cult classic? Like, do you go back and watch it often? Do you forget that that's a thing that you did? Do you like, oh yeah, I did that?
No, we don't watch it very often. But
whenever we have these interviews,
yes, we get a chance
to
do that.
We have to rewatch it, so that we're like, what was that? What happened again?
Every time I see it, though, I'm amazed how much I remember of it. You know, you make these things and you do not forget a moment of the film. So it's fun to revisit it and see it with some perspective. But, you know, we set out to make a movie that was really funny, and we set out to make a movie that was really satirical and that had a point to the humor, and the darkness was reflected in the sensibilities of Dan Waters and myself and Lisanne and everybody involved. We all kind of got it. And so in the process of making it, I think we felt like when it felt like the scenes were working and the movie was working, that we were really doing something that was extraordinary. I do remember feeling that, don't you? We kind of had a feeling that we were making something.
But how many, I mean, this is the thing, you can feel like you're making something extraordinary and then the movie comes out and you're just like, oh, we had fun, but the movie didn't work. So it's an amazing feeling to say, we had fun making the movie, we thought it was something special. Hey, it is something special.
I mean, because I know that before it actually started shooting, there was so much caution, especially over the wariness of the agents of the actors, and there was a lot of like, oh, maybe you shouldn't take this. I mean, does that that must have added pressure to the production, knowing that you've kind of got this responsibility of the careers of the actors? Or did you just think,
no, we
let's
were
get
arrogant
on with
young wannabe filmmakers.
That's
our feeling
was
if they
film,
don't get it, then they shouldn't do it. And sometimes the actors who were auditioning for the movie or were interested in being in it got it and their parents didn't, or their agents didn't, and we had issues with that. I think we all felt like if you get it, you get it, and it's going to work. And if you doubt whether we can do it, or if you don't understand the point of view of the movie, then you shouldn't be involved, you know?
And I guess there's a sense of kindredship and teamwork on any film set that you have to all be in it together to make it work.
Yeah, and when that doesn't happen, which does happen on film sets, it can be very unpleasant, you know?
We hear a lot about the box office failure in inverted commas. I mean, do you feel like who's laughing now? Do you feel quite like, sticking two fingers up to that now? And you're just like, look what we did.
In a way, it's a misconception if people talk about the failure of the box office, because it was a very low budget movie that was made by a company that was fueled by the rise in home video. So at that time, to make a movie for that company at that budget level, the idea was to get it in the theaters enough so that there would be an awareness of the film, which would then spur its video sales.
Because it was written by somebody that worked in a video store.
Yes, that's true.
So
too.
I quite like that little...
He'd done his research.
Yeah. He knew what he was talking about.
But so we didn't feel that it was a box office failure at the time. That's not how it was perceived. It got good reviews and it played in art houses in the major cities, which for us was a huge triumph because it wasn't treated as an exploitation film.
I guess this is it. If you reframe what success looks like, then absolutely you nailed it.
Every man at that point had no idea. They weren't published on, you know, have access to this film cost this and made that. I mean, it was just obviously the beginning, like everything of the Steven Spielberg blockbuster era. And now everybody knows what movie cost and what they make and whatnot, but I don't think that at that time there was a huge awareness, especially outside of the industry, of box office.
No, I think it was sometime shortly thereafter that in the newspapers on Monday or Tuesday morning they would publish box office results.
Yeah.
Nobody paid any attention to that before then. Yeah. That was never really thought of.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is such a key indicator now, especially as there's so many more movies being made and there's only so many screens each cinema has. So what's your relationship with cinema like? Are you cinema purists? Do you go to the cinema still a lot?
I still go when I can. I get screeners, so I end up seeing a lot of screeners. But I love to go to the theater, and I do it alone a lot. I like to just ride my bike to the movie theater and sit there and watch a movie.
I definitely go to the cinema. I have a teenage daughter, and I've tried to create a love of film for her. And so obviously it's easy to watch at home. There's so much stuff streaming and whatnot. But to me, there's just certain movies that need to be seen on a big screen. And
I agree. That's what we want to hear. And this is why it's so great for me as somebody that loves cinema. And I'm sure I speak for a lot of our listeners that we love seeing cinemas up on the big screen, hearing it in the right tone, watching it in the right aspect ratio, and nothing beats that.
No, there is absolutely no replacement for that. And people talk about, my screen at home is so big and the quality is so good. It's just not, it's not the same experience to be
part of. The energy of seeing something is being surrounded by people. I always am the one who's laughing at the odd points in movies. Yeah. That I do. My daughter's like, Mom, you're the only one laughing. I was like, I know.
Well, it's terrible for comedies of any kind to have to watch them without an audience. And I actually never really thought about this, but for comedies that go to a darker place, which are more complicated, when you see those in a room full of people, it's fascinating to hear when people choose to laugh and when they don't.
Yeah.
And when the uncomfortable silences become laughter, that whole experience goes away if you sit and watch a movie alone.
Mm. Have you had a chance to watch your movie again with a 2018 audience, and do you sit in the back and look at the reactions and feel that energy?
Tonight.
Is tonight going to be the first night?
I saw it, I think, about 3 years ago at a screening in the States.
Yeah.
And I decided to watch the movie with everybody, and it was interesting. It was good. It was great to see it with a crowd. It's always great to see
I'm excited. I haven't seen it. I mean, the last time I saw it on the big screen was at the premiere.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
Wow.
So I'm really excited to see it tonight with 4K, big screen, enthusiastic audience.
The premiere. You must have been, 5 years old?
Yes. I know. I didn't really get it. It's weird.
How did you even get in?
Well, you know.
Has your daughter, as you said, is 15?
Yes.
And is that your only child?
Yes.
And do you have...
I have two. I have a son and a daughter.
again, considering what the concerns were over the content and the themes of the movie, do you now have a more careful reaction? Because I guess you had, when you were young, you had that arrogance of like youth and you're just like, ah, it's fine, all these old people don't know what they're talking about. Whereas now, like, have they seen the film? Do you care that they watch the film?
So my, I didn't have my daughter watch the film before 2 weeks ago because I didn't feel like she would get all of it. So we always have these conversations about books and films and anything else to say, you can read it or you can understand it, but you won't get it. And why ruin your experience? But because she said literally all of her friends have seen the movie, and I thought, okay, well, I'd rather watch it with you and see what you think. It was interesting watching it through her eyes after she could stop looking back and forth between the screen and me and going, that's you? Yeah. Like, what are you saying?
That must be tricky.
I think it was more so for her just seeing me, because I've just been mom and I haven't been anything else to her. But watching it, that was the realization to say a lot of the themes, because she is a more naive, younger 15-year-old, I would say, the thing that stuck out for her was the high school experience and the social cliques and fitting in and what that all meant. And some of the darker aspects, it just didn't register as much for her.
But I mean, we have this whole different minefield of issues that young people have now. Social yes. media is obviously the most prolific. What's the deal with Heathers 2? Is that happening? Is that not happening?
No, it's not. I don't think it's happening. Yes.
Personally, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. But it'd be interesting. I mean, do you ever daydream about what Heathers 2 would look like in this new age and how they would, like, what would their Instagram account look like?
I don't know. You know, the social media would complicate things in trying to make this movie or a movie like this right now. And my issue with that partly is it's hard to make social media be cinematic. So it just presents a lot of challenges. You can do things. You can have people text and you see the text show up on screen. And there are ways in which people do this.
Perfect note forgery.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Right. You don't have to worry about anybody's handwriting anymore. Nobody has handwriting.
This is it.
Yeah.
I always get cautious like when it's the wrong font for Apple or your Android. I'm like, that's not it. That's wrong. Yeah. I guess, last of all, what's your favorite Heathers quote? Because that's the first thing that everyone's like, Heathers, oh yes, that's the quote. That mine is, I can't say it because it would involve swearing, so I think you can guess, but it involves a chainsaw.
Oh, okay. Well, mine changes on a daily basis depending on what mood I'm in. So I the one that is popping up in my head, it's like our job is just being, what is it now? I'm going to screw up the line about it's our job is being popular. They're
it's
not
like
really.
A job in our, but
it's, oh, it's, oh, damn it. Yeah, screw.
Our job is being popular and shit.
Our job is being popular and shit. Yeah. So they're not really my friends. Yeah. They're like people I work with, and our job is being popular and shit. Because I think, you know, that's a good one. And then always, what's your damage? That is a good one because it's just.
Yeah, the language in it is great. And it's
I'm
also
a chainsaw
relevant.
Guy myself.
I'm a chainsaw guy.
And with that, we think we've got to the end of our interview. Guys, thank you so much. Can't wait to see it on the big screen in Pitch House Cinemas and cinemas nationwide. So thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Picture House podcast, a Picture House's production brought to you by Picture House Cinemas. We would like to thank everyone who works at Picture House Cinemas and everyone who has ever attended a screening of a film at a Picture House cinema. Thanks for listening and see you next week.